It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, longtime Brent Hubbs and Austin Price. As always, want to give a big shout out to our presenting sponsors, that is Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999. Number one choice in East Tennessee for roofing, siding, garage, windows, whatever it may be. You can contact Exterior Home Solutions today. That phone number for a free estimate, 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot of questions. We'll start and we'll jump in with a wide receiver question. With wide receiver being the obvious position of need, just from number of bodies wise, why weren't slash aren't we more aggressive in the portal? Could we have not landed some depth pieces, or will that be a spring portal goal?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there were some of the receivers that went in and found new homes before Tennessee realized, okay, we're so thin, right? Like, you know, at that point, Squirrel, they didn't know Squirrel was for sure leaving. They knew that they would probably lose, you know, Webb or Nimrod, maybe both, but they don't, not sure they thought that Nimrod was for sure gone. Like when, like, the Danke and all those players kind of went in and found a new spot. Now, since then, you know, I don't think Tennessee's, you know, been, you know, heavily talking to anybody. They've inquired about some kids. They looked at the kid at Penn State. They looked at Malik Benson, and then they chose to not really do anything there with those players. You know, and we'll see if anybody opens or enters the portal from Notre Dame or Ohio State, the only two teams left that have windows to go in, unless there's a head coaching change at some school, which would open up a 30-day window for that particular school. So if you don't have anybody go in that catches your fancy now, yes, you're likely going to add somebody in the spring window.
We'll go to Andrew. He says, what food would you send to the transfer portal? Kind of like the laundry question from last week. Hubs, I would ask AP, but we've only got a 30-minute, you know, window here.
I'm gonna be kind. AP's palate has expanded significantly in the last decade. I will give AP credit. I mean, he was
eating, eyeing that mac and cheese at Ohio State, man. I was like, you want a bite?
I mean barbecue. I mean, he's moved on. I mean, he's really broadened his horizons. Here's my throwaway. You can take all casseroles and throw them away. I can eat a potato casserole, but outside of that, I'm done. I'm not interested in chicken casserole. When we were a kid, my mom used to fix tuna casserole, which is about the most disgusting thing on the planet. Yeah, exactly.
That just sounds like some like cat food.
Yeah, I mean, well, I used to feed it to the cat to make my mom think I'd ate it when she had her head turned the other way. My mom and dad, because I hated that food. So I'm not a big casserole guy. Green bean casserole at Thanksgiving. I'm boycotting. I'm throwing away. Not boycotting, but I'm throwing away casseroles if I got to get rid of something.
I'm not the right person to ask here, as Eric pointed out. I like what I like, and everything else can be cold.
It's not much.
I like what I like, and everything else can be cold.
That's a pretty good point about the casseroles. Now that I'm trying to think, the only casserole I think I eat is chicken casserole. I mean, my mom made it, and my wife makes it now, and so
they make corn casserole at every family function on the Price side, the Deerdorf side. The corn casserole is a must for everybody on both sides of the family over here.
At Thanksgiving, that's the only time I have it. At Thanksgiving, I am a big corn casserole guy. I will say that, but that's not a normal Sunday afternoon.
I mean, breakfast casseroles. I don't like any of those deals. I can eat a potato casserole. It's got potato chips on top of it, and that's about it.
I tell you what, I can call, and it's not a food per se, but like, it drives me nuts, and you guys are going to laugh because you know you've seen me do this.
Squiggly bacon.
No.
A Coke with heavy ice.
No, that's not it. No. I hate when you go to a restaurant and they bring the pickle spear, like you know, on the side, like with the hamburger and fries. I don't want that. Like, I don't want it. And let me tell you what, it drives me more nuts when they do it with kids. Like, most kids aren't eating the pickles. I don't, you know, maybe some, but most are not. And so, like, when they bring that out there, and I've got to look, my kid's like, I don't want that big old thing, which is, you know, like me, right? But, like, I that's a thing. Like, do not bring a pickle. I don't need that pickle juice infiltrating the bun.
So, if you get like, a sandwich at McAllister's, they do that.
And he's not eating a sandwich
at McAllister's. Come on, Kane.
He's never eaten a sub sandwich in his life. Are you kidding me? Oh.
That's not true. I will eat cold cut meats. I just don't like the... Oh. Well, seriously, I will eat. You take me. Well, I'll eat a cold ham sandwich. I don't want to, but I will. I'm not going to starve.
Deli meat ham sandwich or like a leftover Thanksgiving ham?
No. Deli meat. Like, you know, like, honestly, like I used to love it. Now,
that's good to know because when we're on road trips, instead of that Chick-fil-A drive-thru, we'll find us a little deli to stop at, and they'll wrap the pickle square inside the paper.
I said I don't want to, but I will. I love to get like deli ham, and put it in the pan and cook it up a little bit. Get hot ham and cheese
you had in high school. Okay, I got you.
The leftover Thanksgiving ham and turkey sandwiches, can't beat it. Best part about Thanksgiving, in my opinion. Vol around the world. Are you surprised that ESPN's way too early top 25? Tennessee is ranked number 19.
None of that matters.
It didn't surprise me. I mean, Tennessee's replacing a lot on the offensive line. You know, they've got a known injury to a starting cornerback. They're having a turnover in the wide receiver room, and they lost their best offensive player in Dylan Sampson.
Most of the people that are writing those two are also going, okay, Tennessee lost their leading receiver in Squirrel White. They lost Brew McCoy. They lost Dylan Sampson. And just like a year ago, they were like, Tennessee lost their leading tackle in Elijah Herring. They lost their starting corners because they don't know who Jermon McCoy was.
Right.
You know, so I mean, like, again, that's why I said none of that stuff matters. Like, you know, just go beat Syracuse and move to the next.
I was more surprised to see some of the Heisman odds with Nico as high as they were than it was Tennessee at 19.
You know, I'm not shocked because Nico was still like in the top 8 Heisman odds like through the month of October. And I'm like, what are we doing here? I mean, nothing against him. I mean, he didn't have a horrible year, but he was not worthy of being in those conversations this year. So, I mean, Arch hadn't started 3 games and he's – what's the second best dog? They're just names.
And again, it's this time of year. They're just people just putting out some content.
Yeah. Nashville 615's got a couple. First one, in terms of roster building, from a fan's perspective, it seems like there's been a lack of a plan for the last 2+ years, specifically on the offensive line and a wide receiver. Is this something a GM could manage?
I don't know. I mean, the plan has been, I mean, they've gone out and signed a bunch of high school players on the offensive line, and none of them have played. I mean, I don't think that they sat in a room and said, let's go sign these guys and they're not going to play. I don't think that was a plan. I mean, the question becomes when do some of those guys play versus starting 4 transfers on your offensive line? You know, I've mentioned this, they've got what, AP, 17, 18 guys, you know, on the offensive line looking to add another. I mean, so I don't know that it's a lack of plan as opposed to a lack of being willing to play younger players.
The GM role is the most inflated deal at the college level. At the end of the day, your head coach is your GM. Like, most of these college coaches are not. You think Michael Lombardi is over there in North Carolina telling Bill Belichick what he's going to do? Bill Belichick is telling Bill Belichick what he's going to do. I mean, like, no GM is going to help. Now, could a GM help you manage money for your like NIL budget? Yeah, I do think that could be the case. But I also think that there are people on each campus, even if they don't have a GM, that can help you do that. So like when you look at, you know, the way this roster has been constructed, I mean, you know, offensive line, they brought in a bunch of really good players in last year's class. You know, I've talked to Cooper Mays extensively about that. He's a huge fan of, you know, the Gage Ginther, Jesse Perry, Bennett Warren, Max Anderson group. You know, they got a bunch of solid players coming in this year, obviously with David and Ogumoro and Nick Moore. But, like, it's still a developmental position. And so, like, does the offensive line coach want experience, which means they go to the portal, which, again, like, how do you eventually get experience if they keep going over top of you?
Yeah, and at the receiver position, it just feels like they've just not hit on some guys.
Yeah.
You know, just some of those guys that they took early on. Now, and I'm not talking about the Braylon Staley's, Mike Matthews, and those guys. I'm talking about, you know, where Nimrod was and Caleb Webb. And, I mean, those guys got opportunities when there was all those injuries 2 years ago. You know, and I just some of those guys just didn't pan out is the best way to say that at this point. So, you know, if you want to say the lack of plan was there were some poor evaluations and guys didn't work out, yeah. I mean, I think that's good. But I don't know that it was just some terrible planning at those two positions.
Well, this particular class, Tennessee signed three receivers, right? Mm-hmm. The previous two full cycles, they signed a total of three. Nathan Laycock in one, and then Staley and Matthews in the other. And so, you know, I think that's where you're seeing, you know, some of that, Hubs, is you go, you know, two full cycles, and you only signed a total of three, then you better be uber productive in the portal. And again, Tennessee, Chris Brazel was just, you know, he had a few nice plays last year, but it wasn't like groundbreaking stuff. Dante Thornton improved a lot in year two, you know, but he's gone now. So, I mean, like, you know, there's a lot of unknown at that receiver spot. We talked about that on Tuesday with just the fact that, you know, you have seven guys currently, four of which have never played a college down.
Do you think they've missed the window to stack the roster in order to maximize Nico's potential best/last year in the system?
I think it depends on the development. I mean, it really does. I think it depends on how many – I mean, what does Mike Matthews look like in year two? You know, what does Chris Brazel look like in year two? Are they the same guy? Are they infinitely better? You know, if they're infinitely better, then, like, you know, the, I mean, I think, you know, you've put pieces around Nico. If they're the same guy, then, you know, I think it'll be a tougher year.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, at some point, it can't just be go get 12 players out of the portal on offense to build an offense around the court. Like, you've got players on your roster. Some of those players are going to have to play. I mean, defensively, they've developed some high school players, and they've put them in the starting roles. But they have to do more of that on the offensive side of the ball. That's why what Austin's talking about with Mike Matthews is really important. Peyton Lewis is really important. You know, somebody on that offensive line, I don't think it's going to be five transfers, right? It's going to be some high school players that you've recruited is going to play on your offensive line. And that's what they've got to do on offense, similar to what the defense has done to build where the defense is at over the last few years. I mean, the defense is supplemented with transfers. Let's don't act like I'm not sitting here saying they're all high school kids, but they've had transfers in. Just they haven't been as dependent on the transfer market, it doesn't feel like, defensively, as they have been offensively. Maybe that's not a fair statement when you go numbers to numbers, but just the feeling of it is it feels like the offense is more
true. Look at the defensive line, Hubbard. I mean, like, you got Jackson Moy this year. Everybody else is a high school kid. You know, linebacker, everybody's a high school kid.
You had Peely. He's been out the last 2 years. You had McCoy. Jalen McMurray's his backup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Andre, Jacoby Thomas. Because you got –
Andre Turrentine's a transfer.
There you go.
You know, I mean, that, like I said, they've got some transfers, but they don't have as many they're dependent on as the offense has been the last couple of years.
And they naturally rotate more.
And it appears like the offense is going to be this year based on what, you know, where you're at in the offensive line. Tight ends a transfer. Now returning, but transfer. So we'll see.
Every college football playoff team that made a run had at least a fourth-year starting quarterback. Tennessee has decided they want to go with young and highly rated high school guys. Which strategy is better? After Nico, would Tennessee consider a portal guy? I would say to that last part, no, because you have a very highly rated guy, and, you know, GMAC, who's on the team now, and of course Faison Brandon. But it is an interesting question because you saw the college football playoffs were any indication. It's those veteran transfer quarterbacks.
I don't really count Quinn Ewers. Like, Quinn Ewers, as a senior, decided to go take $1 million from Ohio State and then went back to Texas. Like, he should have been in high school when he took that $1 million from Ohio State. You know, but he didn't. He passed up his senior year of high school to go get $1 million. So I don't really count him. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Drew Aller, that's a homegrown quarterback, you know, from the high school ranks. You know, obviously Gabriel, different. Howard, different. And Leonard, different.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I mean, Arizona State got there with a redshirt freshman at quarterback. You know, now you can say, well, they had the easier path because of the conference they're in. I mean, I think through the history of football, portal or
he
not.
He came from Michigan State, though, didn't he? Did the he Arizona State quarterback? Love it.
Maybe after 1 year he transferred in. I don't know. He's a young player.
He's a young player.
He's not a fourth-year player.
Correct.
My point. Anyway, go on.
So I think through the history of football, portal, non-portal, whatever, experienced quarterbacks are like experienced point guards in basketball. Like, typically, like what Jaden Daniels is doing in the NFL is so rare, right? I mean, the more experience you have, the better your chances are going to be. Whether that's a guy who is a homegrown, who's been in your program for 3 years, or whether that's a guy you went and got out of the portal. I think to win, more times than not, you're going to need an experienced veteran quarterback to win at the elite level. I think it's always been the case. Okay. I mean, Tennessee had a better chance to win a championship in 96 and 97 when Peyton Manning was a junior and a senior than they did in 94 or even 95 when he kind of burst on the scene. That has nothing to do with the portal. That's just the fact is you're going to win typically more with veteran quarterbacks than you are young quarterbacks. It's always been that way in football.
In your opinion, what's holding up? What's the hold up from making players employees? Seems like a lot of the problems would be cleaned up pretty quick.
Oh, I mean, are you going to make them contract employees? Where's your insurance liability? What are you doing from a medical standpoint?
CBA,
collective bargaining. I mean, it's not a simple. Hey, you're an employee today. Here we go. I mean, there's just all kinds of insurance, you know, just all kinds of things that go involved in that you just don't, you know, you just don't jump in and say, okay, they're employees now, we're done. I mean, it's just not the realistic world. I mean, will we eventually get there? Maybe, but man, it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of people to get unified and all rowing in the same direction. And in college athletics, that boat's been rowing in a circle because everybody's rowing a different direction for about 3 decades now, maybe 4.
Dalvol 5, Joel Klatt seemingly wants to play the college football national championship game on New Year's Day every year. How would that even be possible schedule-wise? Would you start in mid-August?
You know, I think this is an interesting discussion because I want to see what the ratings numbers look like. Is there a bit of a fatigue factor with the length of the season?
Did you guys feel any juice going into Monday night? Because I didn't.
Now, was that because it was two teams that was not in this region that you didn't know a whole lot about? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that. And, I mean, I know this, and talking to some people, ticket prices were through the roof for that game. No. So there was, for those fan bases, obviously there was a ton of juice there. But I think it's an interesting point of how long is too long for the season. Now, could you do what he's talking about doing? Man, I mean, to do that, you got to eliminate an open date, go back to one open date, and eliminate conference championship games to try to have a chance to remotely get it there. And you might have to end the regular season the week before Thanksgiving, which nobody's going to go back and play an 11-game season or start it a week earlier, I don't think, in August. So I don't know that that's realistic. But, boy, it would make for the calendar. You could tweak your calendar for the portal. I mean, there's some value to it if you could ever make that calendar work, Austin. I just don't know. I mean, if you do, you're going to have to eliminate some stuff, and I don't know that we're eliminating a whole lot.
Well, I think you'd eliminate the 2 weeks in between conference title games and when Tennessee played Ohio State, right? Like, you're just going to have 7 days. Boom, flip it, boom. You know,
and I mean, Army and Navy wouldn't have the day to themselves.
What do they do that if they go to 16 teams? You know,
well, you can't. To me, you can't add teams and speed the calendar up.
Yeah,
I mean, I just don't think there's any, unless you're talking about eliminating a regular season game, which nobody wants to do that because that's potential loss of a home game. You know, or you really want to start games before school starts, playing in, you know, in the middle of August, you know, and finish your regular season the week before Thanksgiving. You know, is TV going to give up on the conference championship games? All those things are factors in there. I do think you have to wonder a little bit about the fatigue factor because it feels like the playoffs were their own season. I mean, the playoffs lasted as long as the regular season lasted. It almost felt like it wasn't, but it felt that way because it was the holidays in there and it was kind of spread out the way it was spread out.
I would get rid of the downtime in December and I would start mid-August. That's just my – I mean, I know that's not super simple, but even though it's before classes start, that stadium would be filled.
I wouldn't have it done by January 1st, but I do think having it done by January the 10th, yes. I agree.
And that's what it was last year, right? I mean, that's normal. I just remember when the expanded playoffs came out and they had the schedule, and I remember the first time I saw that January 19th or 20th, whatever date it was, I'm like, oh, my gosh. I mean, that's encroaching on the Super Bowl time coming up in February.
Well, and hey, there's some people who think that the national championship game is going to be played the week before the Super Bowl every year. And the Super Bowl is going to be in February, the first week of February every year because of ratings and what you're trying to do. you know, when you go to expanded playoffs, that's what a lot of people think is going to happen. You're going to add one more week, so you would play the national championship game essentially this coming weekend, and then the Super Bowl would be the following weekend.
Or, you know, I mean, does, you know, the fact that all four teams that hosted or got the bye, none of them made it, right? Think about, like, when you end the regular season or conference championship games, the amount of time you have until that first-round game, then you have an additional 10 days. Is that too long? Do you benefit from being a team that hosts and stays somewhat sharp versus – it's kind of like that, you know, that NFL team that went 15-1 and you know, all of a sudden they're, you know, in a dogfight because they've been off for multiple weeks, while the team that, you know, kind of was hot late in the year got to play the first round and then
right and didn't set some of their guys, right? I mean, what's the there's always that age old question in the NFL. Do you set players of note that last weekend and give them the extra week off? Does that eliminate some of the effectiveness, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to completely dismiss the conversation because I think it is a good conversation to have. I just think if you go and poll 50 head football coaches, like, all of them are going to say, we want the rest, we want the rest, we want the rest, because there's guys that are limited or guys that might can play.
In the current setup, though, I think what some of them would say is, you want both. So, like, how do you get both? You end up at that 5 seed, and you're playing the 4, which is a lesser team, right? Like in the regular bowl game, kind of like when Texas played Arizona State. And I get that was a close game, and Arizona State could have easily won, but, like, you know, who benefited the most? Like Notre Dame, did they benefit? Penn State, you know, did they benefit from having easier paths?
Yeah, I mean, I think a coach always wants everything, right? I mean, it's like, if you go poll a bunch of them, they want to open on Thursday night because it gives them two more days to prepare for their next opponent, and they get to open camp 2 days earlier. You know, but then if you move the season back up into August, well, that's too early. You can't be stopping that. You want to open your camp in July anyway, because you'd really like to play on Thursday night because it gives you 2 days extra for your second game, which is typically a tougher game. I mean, like, no offense to coaches, but they're always wanting – I mean, nobody wants their cake and eat it, you know, more than coaches. They want everything, and that's always going to be that way. I agree with you. You poll coaches, they're going to tell you we don't want that. But then there's some coaches going to say – privately, man, we really got out of kilter because we took too much time off. We got to look at Josh Heupel, I guarantee you, is looking at when my team gets back to the playoffs, how do we manage the first part of December from a practice standpoint? Yep. Do we need to practice harder? Do we need to practice more? Should we have had less conditioning days and more actual hardcore practice days during that extra time off there? Every coach is looking at all of that right now, trying to figure out what's best. But if they got somebody hurt, then they obviously want extra time off.
We'll do one more, then we'll hit a reset. Wrong Handle wants to know, will Coach Barnes ever put his best lineup on the floor to start the game at some point this season, essentially switching out Mayshak for Gainey? He's got some stats here that show how the offense and defense rating-wise are better with that 5 on there. To me, and I know Rob and Grant aren't here, so maybe I'm talking out of place, but I mean, you got Gainey that's playing 30 minutes a game right now. I mean, he is playing. He's your sixth man. He provides you a spark. He provides you some points off the bench. I mean, I wouldn't mess with that at all. I mean, I think the starting 5, again, is the most overrated conversation in the sport, just like the starting defensive line is for Tennessee. It don't matter. Like, Gainey's still going to play 28 to 30 minutes a game. I don't personally think that we'll see that starting 5 out there. I mean, it's a long season, but – Austin, I like what they have Gainey coming off the bench, and obviously Barnes does too.
You hit the nail on the head. Unless there's an injury, he's not changing.
Again, it's who's in the game at closing time.
Yeah,
to win a game. Who's putting the game away for you? And what do you need at that point to put the game away?
Is, I mean, look at Tony. Tony started a pitcher last year on Friday nights that would give him sometimes 13 pitches, and it wouldn't matter who. It wasn't about who started; it was about who finished and who pitched the most.
Yep,
100%.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we will catch a reset. Let's get a word from our friends, our presenting sponsors over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
You can get that rooftop party started by picking up the phone and dialing 865-524-5888 or visit online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Hey, what's up, everybody? I want to tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Easiest, most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. There's no pros. There's no sharks. You're not battling thousands of other players like that. All you're doing is picking more than or less than 2 to 6 player projections, and you can watch the winnings roll in up to 1,000 times your money back. That's right, 1,000 times your money back. You can cross-train different sports. It can be college football. Of course, that season's over, but the NFL playoffs, college basketball, NBA, baseball's coming up. No more than 6, at least 2, okay? And then you're just picking. They're going to give you a stat projection. All you're doing is picking more than or less than. It truly is that simple, and it's a whole lot of fun. And right now, Prize Picks, if you put $5 in lineups, they're going to give you $50 instantly. You put in that promo code VQ. It's not bad, right? Play $5 in lineups, you're going to get $50 instantly if you put in that promo code VQ. Promo code VQ at pricepicks.com/promo code VQ. Jump back into the questions. We'll go to JVols95. How much of a lock do you think Sanders is to start against Syracuse at one of the tackle spots? Does Perry, Warren, Johnson have a chance to make it a real competition?
As much money as you've got invested in David Sanders, he better be your starting right tackle, providing that he's going to play right tackle, unless he's just simply not ready.
I agree with that 100%, and I'm with you, and I think that's what's going to happen. But the last thing you just said, I mean, game one, what if he's not ready? I mean, that's very real. Like, he is an 18-year-old freshman. He's got to get stronger. He's got to know all this stuff. What if he's ready in week two or week three?
Then why is he not ready in week one? What's six? I mean, he's not going to get stronger in 6 days between week one and week two.
Not strength-wise. You know what I'm saying?
I think he's going to have to go earn it. I don't think they're giving him the starting job when they hand out pads for spring.
But it's close.
But yeah, I mean, I think if you're unsure, I think in the day and age we live in right now, if it's close, then you go play. I'm going to say it this way, and I've said it on the board a couple of times. In this world we're living in, where it's not unlimited money, but you're spending the amount of money you're spending right now, you cannot tie up a lot of your salary for people to stand on the sideline and watch. So if you're spending a good amount of money and assembling a recruiting class, you just became a younger football team. Because you can't sit there and look on the sideline and go, well, there's this amount of money standing over there holding the clipboard or standing over there watching. Now, you got to go win the game. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But, again, if you're gonna focus on roster assembly with youth, you're going to be a younger team, because I just think that you cannot afford to have a bunch of guys standing over there not playing who are making money.
No different than what we do at VolQuest. I mean, you look at the number of stories that Grant Ramey writes, it's simply because he makes the most money. And yeah, so he's got to be the one doing it.
Yeah, he's the first round draft pick. Now, I think as a coach, this is the challenge for college coaches. Because college, Eric, you know this, college is built around competition and going out and earning a job. Okay. Whereas in the NFL, the Titans drafted J.C. Latham on the offensive line in the first round. The previous year they drafted Peter Staronsky or how you pronounce his last name. They were starters the day they drafted him.
Yep.
They were starters. They were first-round draft picks. They were starters. And that's how that world is. And everybody in the locker room understands that, right? Like, the guy who's, quote, competing with J.C. Latham understands Latham's going to be the starter because that's where all their money's invested in. That's not where the college world has been. How do you make that transition? How hard do you make, how challenging is that transition to make in your locker room? I think that's only continuing moving forward. Listen, at Ohio State, Jeremiah Smith, it was really easy, right? I'm sure they paid him a good amount of money. He was the best one. It was a laydown that he was going to do. But what happens if it's equal? You know, when a veteran feels like he's a little further along and a coach likes that veteran, and then somebody over there in the, quote, GM role that everybody wants to have says, well, coach, you got to play the one you're spending the most money on. Then where are we at? That's going to be the fascinating part in all of this over the next couple of years.
How does Rodney Garner and staff feel about the defensive tackle depth going into next year with Robinson and Wallace? Awesome prize.
Well, they have to continue to see those kids move along, right? I mean, with Wallace, I mean, he did not play this year. He spent most of the year in the weight room. Nathan Robinson did get in some games, sometimes on offense this year. But, you know, it's someone that, again, big body, needs to take a step this offseason because, you know, you want to continue to have the same amount of depth that you've had the past couple of years. And so to do that, I think those type players – have to be more of a factor going forward.
Of course, you have Hobbs, Eason as well, and Moy, their defensive tackle too. This one's on Hobbs. What is the ceiling on Hobbs? Was a highly rated recruit. Do you see him as someone who can take a step this offseason, potentially propel himself into a quality NFL draft prospect?
I do. I thought he had a nice year this past year. I thought he played pretty well. You know, the only thing that's been a problem for him is the continued shoulder issue that I think has stunted his physical development a little bit in the offseason from a strength standpoint. But I think he's got a burst. I think he's got some explosion to him. And I thought he played pretty well in that rotation this year at defensive tackle.
Yeah.
I think he's a good player.
All right, we'll go to Athron. Got a couple here. Are Jackson Moy and Wendell Moy related? No, they're not. One is – Moy is
and what's over the knee.
Yeah, Wendell's looks like Mo, but they do sound the same. What is the last day we could reasonably expect any transfers?
Oh, I don't have a date. I mean, I think in this day and age, the drop ad and different ways to get guys in school, you can that road's on that's on down the road. I don't think it's like the end of this week or anything like that with drop ad.
You have 3 days from this morning to get in. For those kids at Notre Dame and Ohio State.
To get into the portal, not correct. To bring into your campus, correct. To get that's into right. The portal.
And then after that, it boils down to like, you know, how quickly, if Tennessee's going on somebody, how quickly do they get in school, you know, all that. So, I think by next weekend, this thing's pretty well set. I mean, does it have to be? No, but I think it probably is one way or the other.
Now that the season is officially over, thoughts on the football season in general? I thought it was awesome.
Well, I mean, every week in the regular season counted.
Yeah, I mean, it was so much fun scoreboard watching and coming home and watching all these important games and saying that somebody's season's over only to give them more life and two weeks after another upset. I thought it was great.
And I think that's what college football Austin has to look at a little bit. November was the best November college football's probably ever had. But then it does feel like it kind of lost its steam down the stretch here a little bit, which goes back to a little bit of what we were talking about in that other discussion. That I think you have to look at. I mean, college football was on the forefront of everybody's tongue and on everybody's mind through Thanksgiving. And then it kind of dwindled a little bit. And so I think that's not bad, but you went from the highest of highs to maybe not as intriguing as you thought it would be down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, that 2 week lull. And I think in part, really, it's a 3 week lull, right? Because some of those conference championship games didn't matter. Like there was a couple that did, but I mean, you know, I think the lull coming from the last week of the regular season, like if you're in Tennessee, you weren't in the conference championship game, you went from playing Vandy and then you didn't play a game for like 19 days, whatever it was it 3-4 weeks, whatever it was.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
You know, I mean, like that's
a long time.
That's a long time. And then those teams that played, like Ohio State's another one that had 3 weeks off. 3 weeks off, you play a game, and then you got another 10 or 11 days before you played the Oregon game in the Rose Bowl. So, that's why all of a sudden I think felt like it drug on. I think if you had games every week and there wasn't like this huge lag time, then I think it probably feels just a little bit different.
Like, where were the best place for James? NFL. Say what?
There's no lag time in the NFL outside of the team that gets the bye, which is one now. It used to be two. There's no lag time. You play the end of the regular season. The next week, you're playing the wild card weekend. The next week, you're playing the divisional weekend. The next week, you're playing the conference championship games. I think that's where the college game has to get to. which nobody wants to, because everybody's like, oh, it's going to be too much. But like, I think that's where if you want to keep the pedal on the metal, or the metal to the pedal. Yeah. Whatever. That's where you want to get to.
Where would the best place for James Pierce speed to land in the draft, given his draft stock somewhere between 10 and 15?
I think James needs to land somewhere that's got a veteran defensive line coach. I don't know what team that is in there, yeah. But I think someone who's got an experienced line coach, that he can build trust with and with some real stability there, I think would be really good for James to maximize his play, particularly early in his career as he learns to be a pro.
Fort Knox, based on current information, what is your best guess about what the quarterback room is going to look like a year from now? Who leaves, stays? If Nico stays another year after this one, what happens then to GMAC or Faison?
Well, what happens is, like, it's pretty simple for me. Let's say Nico leaves and goes to the NFL. Then it's a three-man race heading into spring practice. Merklinger, George, and Faison. Faison will just be getting here. George will have been a redshirt. So the only person I would even worry about leaving would be Merklinger. And where does he feel like he's at in the mix, right? Does he look and go, those guys are better than me, I'm better than those guys? How does he view it? How does he see it? Because he's going to be the one in the room. He's going to be in the meetings. He's going to be on the practice field. He's going to see all that. So where's he at with it? In a perfect world, Merklinger, George, Faison, they go into spring practice competing. Well, guess what? Josh Heupel is not going to name a starter in spring ball. So then you're going to go into the fall. And so it just becomes a three-man competition, spring of 2026 through fall camp of 2026.
Blayton Kay, with Tennessee off to a good start in the 2026 recruiting class, where do you believe the ceiling is for this class? And after 4 years under Josh Heupel, what do you believe is the overall perception of the football program with recruits?
One that's continuing to trend up, a very stable program, unlike just a few years ago. And what was the first question, Eric?
What do you think the ceiling is for the 26 class?
I don't know. I mean, they're obviously off to a really good start. I think the best thing to do is just, win a bunch of battles against teams you're competing against and, fill in, how many do you take, right? I think as long as you're finishing with top 10 classes, you're getting better. Because I do think you can now, there's going to be people on there that go, you're talking about supplementing the rest of your class with a portal. Tennessee didn't do that very heavily this year. Agreed. But I think that's how you supplement. You don't have to have a top 5 class if you're supplementing with the portal.
David Keith fan, how many of you had a chance to look at the tape of Star Thomas, and who would you compare him to from a Tennessee running back in the past? Brent, seems like a question, at least a comparison that you could answer.
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know. I struggle with some of those comparisons. He's not a heavy bruiser back. I mean, but Austin, I think he's put together better than maybe some people think. He's a little thicker than some people think that he is.
Yeah, poor man Cedric Houston.
Okay. I mean, is he that big?
He's bigger than I thought he would be.
So Cedric was 220, 225, somewhere in there.
So he's about 210. I think it's a sneaky 210, though. Like, he doesn't really necessarily look 210, but he's 210.
See, I think he looks thick. I haven't seen him in person.
You would know. I haven't seen him in person, so yeah.
I think he was a bigger kid than I gave him credit for when he walked in the door there. And he looks 30.
Okay, well, that's some Cedric Houston vibe to him.
Well, he's been playing college football for a decade, so, 30's right around the corner. What can some of us 45-plus age guys do to get great hair like Mike Keith?
You're asking the wrong man. Mine's white.
Yeah, but you can have great hair. You just choose to burn it off. Like, yeah, because I have no hair.
I'm trying not to be the grandpa look when my daughter is 16. So if I let it grow out, it's just going to be white.
You've got to do that. You got to pull back out that picture of you from the radio station and let it go back and get the comb over going.
I'm not doing the part that I used to have, because I had a mess of hair. I don't know what I was thinking back then. Whew.
I want you to grow it out and then slick it back like George McFly.
All right, AP, got a couple of questions for you here.
33%.
Can we get a general breakdown on how the star system works for recruiting? And why don't you have this guy being a five-star go?
Well, they normally start out with less than 30, but they end up with about 32. The theory is to end up with about 32 five-star players, which would be the equivalent of the first round of the NFL draft. And so that's kind of where it goes. There's obviously, 200 and something four-stars after that, and then it drops off after that. So that's kind of where it goes. And I don't know if there's a set number of four stars like there is. I think the five stars is meant to be about 32.
Who is ranking these players, and has this changed over the years?
Well, sure. For On Three, it's Charles Power and Cody Belair. For 24/7, it's Tom Loy and others. For Rivals, I think it's Adam Gorney and Adam Freeman and some of those guys. It's changed some over the years at the different companies, but a lot of it is evals, watching senior film, seeing kids, in person at camps and so on and so forth.
Brent, Mike Keith talked about how the leadership in the communications department had a vision for the future voice of the Vols and how big of a draw that was for him. Can you give any insight into what that vision or expansion may look like?
No, I don't have any real details other than, we're in a world where from a multimedia standpoint, it's beyond just radio. And a coach's TV show. If you go and look at anything that the Titans have done, they had the OTP, the official Titans podcast that they did, regularly, that was important. They did a lot more TV stuff, the pregame TV show. The Titans did a lot of different things. Now, how does that all conform into the college space? We'll see. But we're in an era of video streaming that was not there when Bob took this job 25 years ago, and podcasting and all those things that are out there. I think first and foremost for Mike, it's about getting the radio product, his product where he wants, putting his team together for football, getting basketball going. And then we'll see what all develops out of that, because he'll do more than just call football and basketball games.
That reminds me, when we get off here, remind me to call, and I'm going to get, I'm going to copyright the OVP.
The OVP. The OTP was – that was a good name. I'll give him credit.
I'm going to make them buy it from me.
Hey, you know what they had there in the Titans radio booth? They had a booth cam. Hello.
Yep, had a booth cam. Yep. Not a live booth
True,
cam.
True, just for time. Reaction, yeah.
Just for that. Those are popular, and that wouldn't surprise me to see that arrive at some point.
I need one on if you're in that booth, I need one on you. A live hover cam.
You giggling as CP does his deal.
I'm going to put it up, and I'm going to put the feed in the game thread. It's just going to be so much chaos.
There's magic in
that. The one that I wish we had was the Juwan Hail Mary where Priest tells you can close your mouth now. I'd like to actually see you. Are you really like?
That's it. If you're watching on YouTube, that's what it looked like.
Functioning _Volaholic. At this point, are we expect to return a full on-the-field staff as we had last year?
As far as I know.
Yep, I'm with you. Unless a coach takes a job somewhere else, if you're going to make changes, you'd have already made them, in my opinion.
Rocky Top Mock. I've heard of coaching staffs at different schools visiting other schools or NFL teams as part of a professional development during the offseason. Is it a way for the staff to benchmark and pick up new concepts? Does this still happen? And if so, is that something Heupel would consider doing? Not sure, since he's so protective of his offensive scheme. I don't know about Josh Heupel, Brent, but coaches do that every single offseason at every single level.
Yeah,
that's why you have these coaching camps and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, Tennessee's done that. Done that offensively and defensively. To different places in the NFL. Now, you don't see a lot of college-to-college stuff. Maybe a small college guy who knows a coach might come in and talk to you a little bit. But, Tennessee's not packing up going to Clemson and sitting down with Dabo to talk about what they're doing. But, yeah, that NFL stuff happens all the time. Tennessee was in Cleveland last year, the year before. They've been to some NFL places.
It's not true. Heupel want to go down the slide.
From T Mini, which athletic team do you think gets the next national championship at the University of Tennessee?
I don't know. What, baseball? Let's go baseball.
I'll go baseball since it's the only one that's done it.
Back to back. Recently. Back to back.
I don't know about back to back, but I'll go baseball.
Back to back.
Also, who's getting Eric Kane's child their first VolQuest onesie? I got some merch with the Vol Club. Really excited about that. If there's a VolQuest onesie on there, hey, I'll take it. I'll go buy it. So that's something we can put in the works, maybe, right? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
The caner. And we'll get Hawk Kane put on the back of it.
Dean Kane. Super
Hawk. We're gonna go Hawk Kane.
We'll buy it for sure. We've gotten all these hand-me-downs already in this little Tennessee onesie. He's ready to go for the fall. Last one. We'll go to Sam Smith 22-33. It's a basketball question. So a trip to play the best team in the country on the road, what needs to happen for Tennessee to make it a game and steal one on the plains?
You got to be great defensively. You got to be physical. You got to limit their – do what, AP?
Rebound.
Yeah, you got to rebound. You got to limit – that's what I was saying. You got to limit their opportunities for second-chance points. You got to limit them in transition. I think your transition defense has to be really good. You got to shoot the ball well. Tennessee's obviously not been nearly as good on the road as they have been at home. Although, I mean, they won at Louisville. Louisville's a lot better now than they were at the time. I think the win at Illinois was a really good win, a physical type deal. You got to bring that kind of hard hat work deal to this thing. And you got to limit the straight line drives because Auburn's going to put their head down and go straight to the rim on you. So you got to be ready for that. You got to be able to box out.
We'll see how it plays out. Tennessee at Auburn, late game, 8:30 Eastern time coming up on Saturday. We got all the coverage right here at VolQuest.com. Junior Day coming up this weekend. Transfer portal, it's still ongoing. All those notes and more on the General's Quarters and at VolQuest.com. For Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, I'm Eric Kane. A big thanks, as always, to our presenting sponsors, Exterior Home Solutions, for bringing us coverage of this show. 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Been East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, windows, and garages, again, since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. I appreciate you guys for joining us here. We'll be back on Tuesday morning with another edition of the VolQuest Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.